12. Just as a reminder, Daniel is roughly divided into two parts. The first part of Daniel emphasizes God's sovereignty over not only Daniel's life, but over the affairs of kings and of nations, and communicates that fact to the nations. And then in the second half of Daniel, it's basically a little bit like the book of Revelation, where God backs Daniel up and gives him a deeper perspective of what is actually going on in the affairs of nations. He gives him a picture of the spiritual realities that lies behind the affairs of nations on earth. And we noted that the chapters 10, 11, and 12 are the conclusion, the concluding vision that Daniel receives of the spiritual warfare that's raging on the face of the earth. And last week we dealt with the middle section of that. It's a very confusing section. It was king here, king there, war here, war there, constantly back and forth. And that's all the chapter is, really. Back and forth. And the only exception of that is you get that word but. It was... they were always frustrated. And then at the end of the chapter, we started reading about the Antichrist. And things are getting bad. And yet in the end, of course, God's people are preserved. Daniel 12 is actually the conclusion, of course, of that. And the Daniel 12, 1 through 4 is basically the actual conclusion of the vision. And then the from Daniel 5 to the end, there's two questions. There's a questions of, what I would say, angels. And then there's Daniel's question. And the answers to that. And so you divide this chapter that we're going to read into those two parts. The conclusion of the vision. And then the questions that are being addressed to the angel who was sent to comfort Daniel in answer to Daniel's prayers that he had been raising in chapter 10. So, chapter 12. Again, we're dealing with the time of the Antichrist, the end times. At that time, Michael, the great prince who protects your people, will arise. There will be a time of distress such as has not happened from the beginning of nations until then. But at that time, your people, everyone whose name is found written in the book, will be delivered. Multitudes who sleep in the dust of the earth will awake, some to everlasting life, others to shame and everlasting contempt. Those who are wise will shine like the brightness of the heavens, and those who lead many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. But you, Daniel, close up and seal the words of the scroll until the time of the end. Many will go here and there to increase knowledge. Then I, Daniel, looked, and there before me stood two others, one on this bank of the river and one on the opposite bank. One of them said to the man, clothed in linen, who was above the waters of the river, "How long will it be before these astonishing things are fulfilled?" The man, clothed in linen, who was above the waters of the river, lifted his right hand and his left hand toward heaven, and I heard him swear by him who lives forever, saying, "It will be for a time, times, and half a time. When the power of the holy people has been finally broken, all these things will be completed." I heard, but I did not understand. So I asked, "My Lord, what will be the outcome of all this?" He replied, "Go your way, Daniel, because the words are closed up and sealed until the time of the end. Many will be purified, made spotless and refined. But the wicked will continue to be wicked. None of the wicked will understand, but those who are wise will understand. From the time that the daily sacrifice is abolished and the abomination that causes desolation is set up, there'll be 1,290 days. Blessed is the one who waits for and reaches the end of the 1,335 days. As for you, go your way till the end. You will rest, and then at the end of days, you will rise to receive your allotted inheritance. May God bless to us the reading of his holy word. Dear people of God, called to be saints, Daniel 12 contains a revelation of God's future purposes and, of course, an application of those purposes to Daniel's life and to our life. It's an example of what we would call in theology an eschatological ethic. That's a nice way of saying instruction for Christian living in light of our future hope. Eschatological means referring to the last days, our hope, and ethics is simply our moral, our life conduct. And so it's our conduct, our living, as it's impacted by the promises that God has made about the future. That's what this chapter is about. See, the point of these visions is not just to inform Daniel and us a lot of cool things that are going to happen, but so that our lives are transformed, that we are comforted, strengthened, encouraged by what God is going to do. These divine instructions for daily Christian living are based on our understanding of what is going to happen and on what God is going to do through these things. We are supported by a Christian hope. In this chapter, God calls us to live in the light of his promises. We've seen earlier we are supposed to pray the promises. We also have to live the promises. That's the purpose of Daniel 12. And we'll basically look at three things. First of all, in the first part, God provides protection for his church. It's the first thing we're going to see. Secondly, we're going to see that we have to be ready for the long haul. And thirdly, that we have to learn to trust God's refining providence. So those three points. God provides protection for his church, be ready for the long haul, and trust God's refining providence. That first one, that the Lord is the church's protector, we see in the first four verses. Remember in chapter 11 again that we saw that long rambling chapter where there was a lot of warfare, and we saw there that the church, that the body of believers, were in for a very rough ride. And that vision concludes with these four verses of Daniel chapter 12 reminding us that no matter how difficult it became, God still guards his people. In this passage, God powerfully comforts believers in the middle of their trial. It uses simply a typical Old Testament pattern where a prophet foretells the trials that God's people are going to go through, but at the same time gives them comfort so that they can endure under those trials. So how do you see this protection? Verse 1. Now at that time, that's the time of the Antichrist. We understand from this whole section, we're dealing with the last days here. At that time, Michael, the great prince who stands guard over the sons of your people, shall arise. It would be interesting to have an aside and do a study of who Michael is and where he becomes involved. But that is an aside. Even though it is going to be a time of distress, such has never been seen before in the history of the nation, that is, of the kingdom. Even then Daniel shall arise. The Lord is saying this because he wants his people to have the comfort of knowing about his divine protection. This long vision has described many difficult things for the people of God, and God concludes it with this comfort. Daniel must not allow himself to become overwhelmed with despair. God will keep his people. He will protect his people. If the vision had ended in verse 45, we might have found that kind of a grim ending to the vision. But no, God says, Michael will arise. Michael is one of the archangels. And his name means, who is like God? The name reminds us itself that God is beyond all. He is powerful and he is sovereign. Michael arises at the command of God. He's an archangel, that means he leads a host. And he's a symbol of how God cares for and protects his people through Christ himself. And what this tells us is that we do not live in an impersonal universe. Remember, we've been talking about the spiritual forces behind all that's going on in the world, those forces of evil. Yeah, keep in mind, there are the angels, Michael, and those with him. They're there. The forces of history are not controlled by simply cause and effect. It's not just mechanical. God is personally involved. And through the instrumentalities of his angels, he is protecting his people. And through the instrumentalities at the very end of time, he will use his angels even to summon his people to the final day of judgment. Psalm 91 reminds us that God gives his angels to guard us lest we dash our foot against a stone. Hebrews says they are ministering angels sent forth for us. They are so real. We don't often think about this, but Hebrews reminds us we may have entertained angels unawares. So as believers, be assured of God's protection. And that's important to know, because we have to be prepared for trial and tribulation. I know a lot of people like to think of hope and glory, and that's what Christianity is all about. But before hope and glory comes trial and tribulation. And there will arise a time of distress such as never occurred since there was a nation until that time. Those are quite some words, aren't they? Jesus uses this language in Matthew 24, where we read, woe to those who are with child and those who nurse babes in those days. Pray for your flight, that your flight may not be in winter or on a Sabbath. Then there will be a great tribulation such as not occurred since the beginning of the world until now, nor ever shall. Jesus borrows the language of Daniel to warn believers that they have to be ready at all times, watching, praying, because the conflict will be severe. Particularly toward the end. And we know that in Daniel here, we are talking about the end. Because we read, and at that time your people shall be delivered, everyone who is found written in the book. This is the time of the Antichrist. But his end is going to come swiftly. One little word shall fell him, namely Christ. When Christ returns in the sound of a trumpet, and we read verse 2, multitudes who sleep in the dust of the ground will awake, some to everlasting life, but others to disgrace and everlasting contempt. As an aside, I want you to note, this is an Old Testament book. People often ask, do you think people in the Old Testament knew about the resurrection? Here it is. Yes, they did. It's in Job. It's in the Psalms. It's in other places. Some translations read, many will be raised. And that has confused many people. And is he saying that only some people will arise at that time? And no, that's not what he's saying. I believe the NIV in this case has the translation absolutely correct. He uses the word multitudes, emphasizing the vast amount of people that will rise. A great multitude that no one can number will be raised. Notice the two groups. Some will be raised to everlasting life, others to shame and everlasting contempt. Notice there is no such thing as the annihilation here of the wicked. There is going to be this perpetual state of guilt and separation from God. But those whose names are written in the book will be blessed. Verse 3 says, the wise, that is those who are believed, because the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, they will shine like the brightness of heaven, and those who lead many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. They will reflect the glory of the Son of Man. 2 Corinthians 3:18, John 1 John 3 reminds us that we will be changed into the likeness of Christ. The hope of believers, even as bad as it's going to be, even in the face of death itself, the hope of believers is not death. It's resurrection and it's glorification to the marvelous resemblance of Jesus Christ himself, to the glory of the kingdom of God. I trust you've noticed how at the end of this vision, God is just heaping up the encouragements. Those grim chapters 10 and 11 conclude with those three encouragements. In verse 1, he reminds Daniel of his personal, powerful, providential protection through Michael. God says to Daniel, I'm on the side of your people personally. I'm in control of the events of their lives. I'm protecting my people. In all of this trial and tribulations, understand something, Daniel. My people are not mere victims here. God's people should never have a victim mentality. Those who are experiencing oppression should know that all of this, in the end, serves toward their blessing. God in his providence cares for his people. Although we may feel like our fate is out of our control in the hand of our enemies, God is saying, don't ever think you are truly a victim. For no child of mine can be victimized while I'm in control of providence. Every trial is purposed for your blessing and my glory. All things work for the good of those who love me. And then in verse 2, he goes on and gives them more encouragement. Even if you lay down your life for me, there's going to be a resurrection from the dead in the last day. In the last verse of the chapter, he reminds Daniel, you're going to die, but you're going to be there at the last day. And then in verse 3, he says, now let me show you a picture of the glory that I'm preparing for you. There's this threefold encouragement. I'm powerfully, personally protecting you in my providence. I'm going to raise you from the dead, and I'm preparing a glory for you in which you will shine like the sun. And then in verse 4, Daniel is told to save this revelation for the sake of God's people. You, Daniel, close up and seal the words of the scroll until the time of the end. God is concerned about us. God is concerned that we have this vision, that we have this comfort. God does not want us to be taken by surprise about what's going to come. He wants us to have it so that we will be strong and equipped for every good work. Now, how exactly Daniel was to save this, we don't know. Perhaps it was a papyrus scroll, and it was very typical that they would make more than one copy, and one would be rolled up and sealed, and the other would be open for people to read. And the reason why you made two copies is because you always had the backup if the other one got damaged. Or it could be what was happening with Jeremiah, where Jeremiah was to write something down and put in a clay pot, and on the outside of the clay pot was the summary. So if the pot got damaged or people got confused, you could always go in and look at the scroll. But in other words, here it is. It's complete. And it's going to stay complete until it's fulfilled at the end. And this is all so that we, who live in a foreign land, can continue to sing the songs of Zion and continue to pray the promises. And the verse ends with, many will go here and there to increase knowledge. And that's simply a description of the spirit of the last days. Believers have the scroll and they can rest secure in the revelation of God. Everybody else will rush here and there looking for knowledge. You find that people are looking for understanding for their life, to help guide their lives. They're looking at all different religions. They look at all different aspects of science. They look in all kinds of education. Any source of inspiration they can find. Some even look for it in politicians. Amos describes well the days. Amos 8, verse 12. Behold, the days are coming, declares the Lord, when I will send a famine in the land. Not a famine for bread or a thirst for water, but rather for hearing the word of the Lord. And the people will stagger from sea to sea and from the north even to the east. And they will go to and fro to seek the word of the Lord, but they will not find it. Those words portray many who reject God. And they go all over looking for what only God can give them. When you reject God, when you reject His truth, and you search for it among lies, you can never be content. You will always be searching. Oh, you can learn all manner of things, but not find peace. And I think of the explosion of knowledge that's taken place in our time, and the explosion of unrest and anxiety, dependence upon drugs and so on in our day. As Isaiah 57 says, there is no rest, there is no peace for the wicked. But for those of us who belong to Zion, even in the face of all tribulation, we have the assurance of peace. God is with us. Move on to the latter part of the chapter, and we see in the second place that we have to be ready for the long haul. Then I, Daniel, looked, and there before me stood two others, one on this bank of the river and another one on the opposite bank. One of them said to the man clothed in linen who was above the waters of the river, "How long will it be before these astonishing things are fulfilled?" Notice, the question is not, when will this be fulfilled? It is not, is this going to happen 1,000 years from now, or 2,000, or 3,500 years from now? It's really, how long? How long is this going to last? It's like the prayer in Revelation of those under the altar. How long until deliverance? How long are your people going to have to endure this? And the response is one of the most solemn moments in the whole book of Daniel. He raises one hand and he raises the other hand, and this man clothed in linen, though it's the clothing of the priest, swears by God that the words he says are true. And then he utters a time, times, and half a time. That phrase was used before in Daniel. And we have seen before, as it is also used in the book of Revelation, that it is a phrase that indicates an extended but definite period of time. Some people want to define it to a certain period, limited, so many years, so many days, so on. That's kind of difficult, because which calendar do you use? It's usually a time that refers to the time before the first coming and the second coming of Christ. And that's really what we're talking about here. Christ goes to heaven, and you have the time of the Antichrist. It's a limited time. And the point is that God is in control of all events. And we are told that when evil has done its worst, that is, as soon as they finish shattering the power of the holy people, all these events shall be completed. When the evil has done its worst, and the hopes of God's people seem shattered, God will act. This grim work of the oppressors will roll on and on. And then God will act. At the appropriate time, God will intervene. When we seem like we are at the bitter end, God intervenes. We read, when the power of the holy people has been finally broken, all these things will be completed. That's solemn, because it speaks of terrible days and yet of God's action on behalf of his people. And finally, we have to learn to trust in God's refining providence. Verses 8 to 13. Daniel is confused by the time, times, and half a time. We can understand that. And he says, Lord, what's the outcome of this all going to be? He had heard it, but he simply couldn't comprehend it. Lord, tell me more. When and where and how this is all going to happen? Explain to me. I don't understand. And the answer is a little bit like the way parents sometimes answer their children. Run along, Daniel. Go on, go your way, Daniel. The words are finished. The words are closed up. Sealed. Until the time of the end. Many will be purified, made spotless and refined. but the wicked will continue to be wicked. None of the wicked will understand, but those who are wise will understand. God's people, those who know the fear of the Lord, the beginning of wisdom, they will be purified. But the wicked will continue in their way of wickedness all the way to the end. Daniel, that's what you need to know. No matter what happens, God's people are being prepared. A bride being made spotless for her husband. They are being made Christ-like. They are being reshaped. They are being conformed to the very image of God. Not the wicked. They're going to continue their ways. But believers are being transformed. And then Daniel is given a couple of time periods, and this, of course, leads us off into all kinds of tangents, and we're not going to go there this morning. But for the time, we read, from the time that the daily sacrifice is abolished and the abomination that causes desolation is set up, there'll be 1,290 days. Blessed is the one who waits for and reaches the end of the 1,335 days. Again, remember that 1,290 days refers to approximately 3.5 years, depending upon which calendar you use. Some it's 3 years, 6 months, and others 3 and 7 months. But it would refer, in other words, to a general time period with a definite end. And it says here, it's from the time that the daily sacrifice is abolished, and we understand that's the time when Christ died on the cross, the temple veil is ripped, and there's no more sacrifice necessary, and the time that the abomination that causes desolation is set up. Well, that's immediately the time when the Antichrist comes in, those who oppose Christ. They were there in the days of the apostles. And what did they set up? The ways of man over against the ways of God. That's an abomination. It causes desolation in the church. As soon as that happens, there's going to be this time period. 1,290 days, or approximately 3.5 years, or time, and half a time. It's a general period. And to emphasize that point, we read, blessed is the one who waits for and reaches the end of the 1,335th day. And the only way to really understand that is to say, blessed is he who holds on until the bitter end. It's going to be bad, but blessed is he who holds on to the bitter end. Point is, this tribulation is not going to last forever. And God alone, don't you speculate about times and seasons. God alone determines times and seasons. Daniel, you go your way until the end. You'll be there at the end. As curious as we are about all this, it's not for us to know the times or seasons. You simply go our way and do the things to which God has called us to do. Namely, live for his praise and glory, witnesses of his grace. That is the constant end of all biblical thinking about the last days. It's not so that we may know times, hours, seconds, days. It's how shall you then live? 2 Peter 3 says, since everything will be destroyed in this way, what kind of people ought you to be? You ought to live holy and godly lives as you look forward to the day of God and speed its coming. That's this eschatological ethic. The biblical response to the promises of Christ coming again is to recognize he is the King of glory. We bow before Him and we serve Him to the bitter end, because His promises are yes and amen forever. Then one day we will hear Him say to us, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful over a few things. Enter into the joy of your Lord." This chapter teaches us, because of who we will be, that we are a different people in the world today. We live, we work, we talk, we act, all in anticipation of who we are, of what we will be when Christ comes, believing that what the Lord has begun, He will complete. Anyone who is in Jesus Christ has that assurance. Anyone who does not know Jesus Christ as Savior and Lord, when Jesus returns, will know only shame and eternal contempt. How will you live? Amen. Number 400.